To the Tuesday, April the 8th regular board meeting, and we will report out first from the closed session. And we just had a discussion about recent issues and current labor negotiations. So that's what was covered during open session. What we need now is a consensus on the order of business. Is it looks like everybody's quickly looking, and does it look good to everyone? Okay, we'll move from there. We need approval of the minutes, and those are from March. But the minutes, aye. Okay. All right, we are moving on to our student representatives. So please introduce yourselves. Some of you need almost no introduction.
Thank you.
Maybe both of you need no introduction. Yeah, I don't know, but go ahead and tell us who you are.
Thank you very much. All right, so a lot of exciting news. Our Latin Club, in great fashion, stormed the JCL, which is a big Latin convention down in Irvine over the weekend, and scored first place for the first time ever in our division for medium-sized schools. And there's over 70 high schools, 1,500 kids there, and in our division, we were a smaller school, so it's very impressive that we were able to win. And so a lot of kudos to them. Next, our band and jazz band is currently in Reno for a jazz band festival. Our FFA is in Fresno for a big state convention, over 5,000 students, and we know they're going to do great. And they are also being recognized as a premier chapter of California. Next, our FHA hero is going to a state competition in Riverside. And that's it for clubs. Next up, we have tomorrow and Thursday in here. Mr. O'Connor, some other of the administration, and some students are putting on a orientation for future freshman parents. So eighth grader parents right now can come to the orientation either night and learn about Slo High and all the great opportunities their students will have at our school. We are currently on full tilt towards graduation. A lot of the senior activities are, you know, happening, proms coming up. And our open house, also known as Tiger Fest, is May 21st. And so this will be our first invitation to all of you to join us on Tiger Fest. And I'm sure we'll have another meeting between now and then so I can give you the time to have more involved. And also ASB is going Thursday to Laguna to advertise to the eighth graders, hey, Associated Student Body is a fantastic way to get involved on campus. We hope you look for us next year. And with that, I'm going to pass it on to Morrow Bay. Thank you.
All right. For those of you who don't remember me from last time or who weren't here last time, I'm Hannah. I'm from Morrow Bay. I'm not Brooklyn. And we'll start off with last month in March when the 11th graders, we took the EAP, and that marked the end of the quarter on March 14th. A lot of the 11th graders are really excited to continue testing, a lot of our state testing. We have a lot coming up next week. And the 10th graders also completed the CASI. That was in March as well. Then we had our spring break, which was a great break from our testing season, and the weather was nice, and I think all the kids really enjoyed their break and came back fresh to learn and test more. And on April 4th, we had our neon dance, which is probably one of the biggest dances of our year, of the year. I want to say it's even bigger than prom, and we actually had a lot of Slo kids there. I ran into a lot of people, and you should have came. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And ASB, we did really good with that dance setup, cleanup. Everything went smoothly, and we're really looking forward to getting the word out to other schools next year, having more attend. And I think it was a really good way to bring other kids together and have a lot of fun. And we're also looking at elections for ASB. We're out, a lot of teachers are out recruiting. As you know, our school isn't that big, so we don't have much of a selection. But we're looking at getting the best that we can in our class. Instead of admitting anyone to the class, we're adding interviews, applications. We worked on that in a play called Fox on the Fairway, which is a comedy, and the kids in it look great. It's probably going to be a really funny play. You guys should come out and watch it. I don't have the times, but it's I'm assuming it's on our website, and it's tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday. And that's it.
Well, thank you, Hannah and Scott. And I just for clarification, Scott, it's what the Junior Classical League. And Mr. Weinschenk is still the person that is the teacher advisor for...
Mr. Weinschenk is our great leader, fearless. Mr. Weinschenk is our fearless leader, yes. And Mr. Lara came too, who's English teacher. So it was great fun, yeah. Great. He was very excited.
Thank you, Scott. Any questions from the board? Okay, we'll move on then. Thank you very much. You know, as you're welcome to stay. But if you might have other obligations like homework, you're free to go. Oh, you have a question. Ms. Rogers.
Well, just before you go, I wonder if Scott might tell us his college plans.
Yes, I am a senior, and I will be attending very excitedly Yale University next year. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you again. Very good. All right. We are honored tonight to have the Phi Delta Kappa Volunteer of the Year with us, Nelda Kirlock. I believe I'm saying that right. Yes?
I am here to present. Sharon Haupt is actually going to get up and speak about on everybody's face when they heard that she had won this honor. So I am going to turn this over to Sharon Haupt because Sharon can tell you all the great things about Nelda, not only at the where she's working, but also her past as well. So, Sharon.
Good evening. So I would like to introduce you to Nelda. And Nelda has been a teacher in our district for 29 years before she retired. She was a mentor teacher, and she was also a reading mentor and a teacher on special assignment for a couple of years, writing curriculum. And she was also a history day coordinator in the district. So after she retired of those 29 years, and I have to say that she had my son, Matt, in second grade, and she taught Amy's son how to read, and I'm pretty sure Nelda hasn't been the same since. So in her volunteer work, she has been a grant reader at Los Ranchos. She's reorganized their book room. She's worked with when setting up the preschool, when they started the preschool program there. She's been a classroom volunteer. She's done testing support. She's done the Read Naturally program. She's come up and helped add instructional services. And she comes faithfully every Thursday to the IMC for about 3.5 to 4 hours and does all of the icky, dirty grunt work. I mean, tell you, working with elementary school books gives a whole new meaning to dirty books because those kids are blech. So she's always willing and able to do anything and everything for us. She giggles out loud, faithful and willing to just jump right in and help move and schlep and get sweaty and dirty with the best of us. So we talk about books, we enjoy books, we talk about kids and what's best for kids. But I think the most important gift that Nelda has given to us through her example is her continuing inspiration in that we can all do more and that we can all do better and that there are no limits to what we can do to support students and their learning. And I would also like to say that Nelda would probably tell you that you have not lived until you have come and volunteered at the IMC. Okay. So, Nelda, congratulations. This is a well-deserved honor.
Thank you. I just want to say I wouldn't have been doing all of this if I didn't just love doing it. And I've been retired 20 years, and really, retirement is great, you guys.
I'd like to invite the board to come up and take a picture with Nelda. We're supposed to put this photo in, goes in the personnel office, and there's strawberries in the back for everyone to enjoy. So you can't leave yet, Nelda. Absolutely.
to make this official, we're going to adjourn for... We are back in session, and we are now at item 6.01, correspondence. And we had a letter from our local assemblyman, Kacho Asajian, which was a response to our resolution requesting that the governor, to maintain the Ag Incentive Grant funding in the state budget. So we got a response from him, and I think it was a very positive response. All right, we are at the item 6.02, which is the public comment. This is a point where we welcome comments on matters of district interest. Of course, the board can listen or will listen, but cannot engage in discussion on any action items not listed on the agenda due to the Brown Act, and the total time is 20 minutes. We also request that people, if they have a specific item they want to speak to that's on the agenda, I forgot to mention that each speaker is entitled to 3 minutes, 20 minutes total. You don't get 20 minutes to entertain us and enlighten us.
Address the MOU and tell you that I was able to hear the audio and then actually see the video, which the body language even helped more. And I have to say, you guys are perfectly right about everything except Switzerland, and I'll explain that in a minute. That all your points are well made, and you know, people in Cayucos really appreciate the way you've welcomed the students and the families for so many years, and that you were willing to compromise to such an extent and then to have this seemingly falling apart. And I want to encourage you not to let it fall apart, because there's a bigger game that needs to be played here. You asked, and this comes back to Switzerland, why the board hasn't stepped in, why we've sat on the sidelines. Well, our individual board members have gone to most Coast meetings and encouraged them on two issues. One is the MOU, and also on area seats. We were stripped of our area seats. We used to have two seats on the Coast Board, and we were stripped of those seats at unification, and we haven't had any representation since. But they say we don't need representation. They're doing just fine, you know, representing us and having our interests. But they don't, because they aren't addressing this issue, and they won't compromise to the extent that you have been willing to so far. The bigger game, I think, is that they should be the only ones who fail to compromise here, and that should be public. And if you back away because I can totally understand why you would want to, but if you back away from it for the next actions, which would be we have to start from scratch with this, from the void, essentially. I asked how many voters in your district know about this issue. Even in Cayucos, it's not, you know, I mentioned it to people. They have no idea what, you know, the kids go to Morro Bay. What's the problem? Well, the problem is the money doesn't follow, and all this money is going up to Coast to pay for middle school and elementary school kids who don't live in our district. So I want to encourage you to go ahead and follow through. Carrie's going to try and our board president's going to try and get another meeting. Hash it out at the level it is. And
you can add some concluding remarks.
Thank you very much. That move ahead with it. I doubt that they will ever approve it, but that will be a public thing. And if they refuse to vote on it, which has been a thing they do, they talk and talk and talk, and then they just let things die, that will be a public thing too. But if you back away from it, then we're going to have to get a running start again to explain it to everybody, the county committee and possibly the state why this is a good thing to do. If they have rejected a sweetheart deal, I think it gives all the more fire to our ambitions here. So we've only been Switzerland because we were told not to rock the boat and that we really upset their board when we show up. So we're ready to do this, but we want to do it with as much power and strategy as possible. And I hope you take that for what it could do. So, and one other thing that came up, high school isn't the feeder school. And so this is a unique situation, and the amount of dollars that are involved are unique. So again, there may be a legislative aspect to this too, but again, that is going to take a lot of money, and it's also going to take this public background to the whole issue to explain it to our legislators why this needs to be done, if that's the avenue that needs to be taken. So anyway, thank you very much, and I would also invite up to three of you to come to our board meeting tomorrow night. Rick, I know, is planning to come, but I think it'd be great if you could hear it from our own board members that I'm not the only one who has this this mission. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Is there anybody wishing to address the board on issues that are not on the agenda at the moment? Okay. Yes, please come forward.
I was going to write down what I said, but there's no time. My name's Janice Brown, and I'm a teacher at Del Mar Elementary. Just came from our association meeting with San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. I wanted to let you know that we've started a committee, and the committee is going to be to support the students with their mental health needs. We're deeply concerned about our community. As you may well be aware, the National Alliance of Mentally Ill numbers say that 1 in 10 children suffer from mental health issues, mental illnesses, and we would like...
Close public comment. Thank you. We are now on item 7.01, which is the business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, I wanted to start off with just a quick update on one of our employees who has decided to leave us and retire, and that is Mr. Rick Manderscheid. So despite the fact that I told him he couldn't leave... and sent his resignation back to him in the mail, saying unapproved. He is retiring, and so I know with Jeff Guy leaving, it was a tough one. Fortunately, we got Mr. Palazzo to replace him, but definitely for Rick, it's somebody that we're going to miss and going to be definitely difficult to replace. So we are working on our next barbecue out in front of the district office to honor Rick, and so I'll send you an invite to that as well as the rest of the district to honor him for his service.
What year will this retirement take effect? 2018?
July.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, yeah. So the only other thing I wanted to share is kind of a timeline. I'm going to have Kim put it up on the screen, and I gave a copy to each of the board members, and so this is... I just wanted to give the board kind of an update about our facility master plan, our survey that we're doing right now, public survey in terms of support for facilities in the district, and kind of what that looks like. So it becomes a rather, and the reason why I bring this up is it's a quick timeline. And so in looking at our facility upgrades and our needs, kind of the key dates, the needs, our needs assessment of the facilities, as well as some of our project lists and timelines, we'll be working with our, so basically the needs assessment is completed, putting that together. We're doing our ed specifications right now, and then we'll be putting together, really working with staffs and doing priority lists for things that we need to, you know, accomplish based on what we're finding out in our facility master plan. So those things could lead the board to a decision to go forward for a school bond election. 14 is really super close, and so I just wanted to share those dates with you. You know, 16 would give us a lot more time, in terms of looking at something like that. And so, again, it's just I wanted to make sure that everyone kind of saw the dates and I wanted to get the information. But it'll be, I think the next step is really to see what those survey results show us and then make some determinations from there, kind of how we're proceeding and where we're headed in the future, one way or the other.
Do any of the board members have any questions they'd like to? Mr. Buckman.
Just one real quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan, are we wedded as a district to holding elections in November, or can we use the primary election as well?
Let
me talk, because I know the timeline.
Oh, okay.
Thanks for
input. Ouch. As a board, you have the authority to call for election whenever you choose. It's just going to cost you a whole lot more. And the timing is not critical, clerk recorder.
Okay. And so if you can help me, if we do it, obviously, out of any sequence, and we're picking up the whole tab, but if we were to do it in a
exactly.
primary or a regular, then we're piggybacking.
We always have that question when we end up with a board vacancy, because
right.
the question comes whether you want to have an election or appoint someone. And the general election is the least expensive way to go because you spread that cost among more agencies and more issues on the ballot, so it all gets divided up.
And on top of that, too, for a Prop 39 school bond, it has to be in a June or November election. So there are some restrictions in terms of when you can go forward with that type of bond. Mr. Isom, who's our financial advisor, will be here when he goes over the survey. He can also answer all those types of questions about when to go, what, you know, there's definitely strategy involved in going out, you know, a governor election, presidential election, those types of things that go into it. So he would be somebody that could probably, you know, discuss a lot of those types of questions. Initially just looking at our needs assessment, because I've seen it, I've gone over it, it's a clear indication that we have major needs at both of our two high schools. I mean, there's no doubt about it in terms of the age of the facilities. They didn't get the upgrades through Measure A. So when all that information comes, there's no rush to rush into anything right now, right? It's just if we did, I wanted to make sure that you had an idea of what the timeline looked like. So there's no push to do to November 14, 16, whatever. But I wanted you to be aware that should that be something that we choose to do, it's a tight timeline.
Yeah, my birthday's in December, Ryan, so
okay.
I can do it then.
Had we considered asking for some change in legislation regarding the use of building funds? Is there a move afoot for that kind of change?
So that was actually a response to me sharing our developer fees, the funds that are in
yes,
our developer
exactly.
fees. And so developer fees can only be used if there's a nexus to growth tied to them. And so they're very restricted in terms of the use of those fees, that you can't use them for anything else. So there's been discussions about that at times, but there is nothing, I don't know that there's anything pressing right now to change that, those requirements that are tied to developer fees.
Is there anything that we could put in this timeline that we could be developing another track of, does that free up monies for us? Would that be something we could do as part of this whole process?
Well, so again, on top of this, we are doing our demographic study, so which will make that possible nexus to growth
okay.
to be able to use developer fees. But developer fees would not be part of this process
okay.
in terms of fixing the facilities, because we don't have the growth nexus to be able to use those developer fees.
Right. But what I'm talking about is a legislative change in how we can use them.
There is nothing right now that's saying that we're going to be able to use developer fees in this. There's no change afoot to change the developer fee regulations.
Can we initiate one? Can we start one? Like, Cayucas is here. They're going to start with
I
her.
Guess.
Okay. All right. We don't want to take on
that's
that
a big
right
one.
Now. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Ringer.
Thank you again. I'm going to open this to any questions from the public. Is there anybody that wishes to address the board on this issue? Okay, seeing. Oh, I'm sorry.
Broad and Orchid area and what have you, that we may well need to build a school.
Absolutely.
And so.
Or add to our current school sites.
Those monies are kind of being held in abeyance to see what happens with that. Plus, we need $150 million is what we're thinking. Somewhere around
that. So we're going to get, yeah. So we're going to, that's
optimal
part of-
money for rehabbing our high schools. And we don't have anything approaching that in our developer account.
Yeah, about $8 million in our developer fee account.
When the public will be polled by the Axum firm, mm-hmm. and we'll have those results, I'm sorry.
At our next board meeting.
At our next board meeting.
April 22nd.
As part of the polling, do you think that they'll be asking if you were asked to support a bond for Cuesta College or K-12 education or whatever, what would you be most likely to support? We'll be getting data feedback on where public sentiment lies with regard to where they would want their bond monies to go.
Absolutely. So there will be questions that tie in support for our potential measure, the city tax extension through San Luis Obispo, as well as the potential bond through Cuesta College as well, looking at support for all three of those measures.
Okay, and would also, we would be wanting to, if we didn't go this year, it would give us more time to really enlighten the business community and other
sites. We have facility needs. There's no denying it, right? And we don't have anything in our budget near enough to even accomplish, you know, those facility needs and upgrades. So that said, the difference is when can you start to upgrade those facilities? So if you go in 14, if you know, you can start after that. If you go in 16, then you're looking at 2017 most likely before you begin those. So it's that, you know, it's putting off the inevitable in some ways. That said, if the public survey, if the support's not there, then we're going to have to do a lot of public, you know, acknowledgement, getting people out, looking at the sites, developing that support. So
if they
it'll
see
be interesting.
It, they'll understand it.
Yeah.
But it's just that things look, particularly at Slow High, mm-hmm. really gossamer on the outside.
Yeah.
It's just once you get inside and
absolutely.
See, you know, that things are tired.
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Well, we have one last shot of public comment on this issue, on this report. Okay. Thank you, everyone. We are now to the item 7.02, the Educational Services Report. Mr. Pinkerton.
Actually,
not Mr. Pinkerton. Prater.
I'll take that one. Yeah, I just want to share quickly a really exciting opportunity that a small group joined me at Stanford University prior to spring break. And we signed up for this. Effectively, it was a seminar of sorts to talk about the merging of what has been long known as EPGY, which is the Educational Program for Gifted Youth that specialized in helping schools in program improvement. They specialized in helping schools whose student bodies represented the achievement gap. And their focus as a business, their business model, was really to help struggling learners through technology achieve grade level standard proficiency and above. And so Stanford combined efforts with Redbird, and they invited superintendents and district teams from all over the country. So there was over 150 of us from New York to Pennsylvania to Florida, all the way here to California. And I didn't know exactly what I was hoping to get out of it, other than it sounded like there might be a nexus there between really a fantastic program for EPGY and this idea of helping struggling learners. Well, at the center of this meeting or seminar was, I think, a revolutionary idea where they've taken the technology of gaming, they've taken the technology, the analytics that Google has developed in understanding user interests and traits, and they're merging those technologies together in a software program that will serve to personalize learning for kids through a technology device on the web with a software program that truly personalizes learning regardless of ability level. In their partnership with Redbird, Stanford and Redbird, over the next 10 years, they've created a partnership to reach out to school districts throughout the country and pilot this technology, this tool, this software design within classrooms specifically designed for schools and classrooms that are focused on the workshop model. So that might sound familiar, but we've been working on that very model in our district instructionally. So this, if you would potentially take a layer off the classroom teacher while giving the students, regardless of their ability, a personalized learning experience designed for their particular level, and it would not just be available at the school but also at home and so forth. So there were a couple presentations of districts in various states that have adopted this, and they spoke about it with great interest and a possibility. So the reason I'm sharing this with you is I asked them to come out and visit us. So April 17th, they're going to come here and talk to us about what exactly does it look like? What is their training mechanism to develop capacity to train our staff? What is the cost and the scalability of it? So there's some tremendous possibilities. Jan Keating, who's a well-known professor out of Stanford, apparatus within that classroom, because differentiation in the Common Core, differentiation with the range of learners, is becoming increasingly difficult. And so this particular model, I think, has great promise. I'm not promising anything other than I want you to know I'm investigating it, I'm looking at it, and I will report back as to what it means and is it realistic for us or could we pilot it? And maybe they'll be watching this some point. I'm hoping they can use us as a beta and give it to us for free. And we could pilot it. They could use our data to become an anchor point in California. So it has great promise. I'm really excited about what it could become. That's my report tonight.
Yes, Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
You're light.
So we chatted briefly about this, and there was a parent component to it that I thought was very interesting. How the parent could become that partner in that education? Can you share?
Yeah. So one of the principals out of Shelby County, Tennessee, Shelby County, Tennessee, one of the largest school districts in the country. They are embedding this program in full in 17 schools next year and in partnering with Stanford University and Redbird. And then their vision of 2020 is to have it healthy when compared across the country. So they have a great disparity of haves and have-nots in the same school district. And they're finding that the parents are showing as much interest at the high end or at the low achievement end as they are at the high end, which is something that is really cool. And they're building in goal-setting conferences. Their parents actually feel like they're a part of the child's learning. And the relationship between teacher and parent is improving as a result of that, which makes sense. They know what the child's working on. They see the progress. It's individualized. There's tutorial components. Before I go too far, though, I have to see it. It was a kind of a dog and pony show. It was impressive, extremely well put together. I was so excited, and yet I don't have the cost, the data. I just need to see it. and see what it would mean. So we're front-loading them now on what it is we need to know. So when they come, it's a worthwhile meeting. And I will have more coming your way once I figure this thing out for consideration. But I look at this down the road, you guys. I see this as a future component in our district, a necessary component.
Thank you, Dr. Prater. Is there any public comment on this? Okay, seeing none, we'll move forward to the public input survey for the LCAP process.
Well, thank you, Board. I'm going to try to summarize. We also have something tied directly to it, which is the Local Control Accountability Plan. And this is new territory in the state of California. And as we look at how we are supposed to put together this accountability plan, we get some guidance from the state, but in many ways we're kind of on our own. And we do have a template that we will use, but even in that, in many ways we're on our own, which is actually kind of freeing because we get to kind of do something that we can interpret and make sense of and hope we get it right. So the process we have used in developing our LCAP is, first of all, to try to get out to the public through stakeholder meetings, especially at our school sites. How does the whole budget process work in San Luis Coastal? What are our revenues? What are our expenditures? What falls to the bottom line? What savings accounts do we have? How does the money come in and get spent in a very general sense in San Luis Coastal? At the same time, to try to introduce what this local control accountability plan must contain in it, the subgroups that we must address, the provisions that must be written into this plan, to share and kind of reiterate what the things are we are doing in the school district, which especially at our school sites, they're pretty well aware of, the things, our initiatives, the work we're doing, and then to ask that question, so what do you think? Are we on the right track? Are there things we should be doing less of, more of? Are we spending our money wisely? Are we utilizing our resources well? Are we heading in the right direction? And to make sure that we give different opportunities to get that feedback. After that, we are then, I guess, charged with making some generalizations from all that feedback, seeing if we can make some sense of it and help us design our plan. Then we will write our plan, create it, write it, share it with the board in public, and at least do it a couple times so that there's plenty of opportunity for public input. Make sure that if people have questions about it, this is a requirement from the state that the superintendent or designee actually answers those questions in writing and responds to public input about that. And our plan is to have that adopted in May along with our budget. At the same time, because it makes no sense to do them separately, they really are aligned. And so to have our local control accountability plan and our budget adopted, because they should be linked. So basically, since about mid-January, Kristen Newland and Ryan Pinkerton and yours truly have been out on a roadshow. We've hit 22 sites and meetings to present those very things. We've done those first two steps of giving some presentation and soliciting some input. We've made sure that we had an opportunity for some feedback individually from those groups, but also recognize that people aren't always comfortable just sharing things out loud and that we need to provide some anonymous survey applications also. And so we've solicited all that feedback, and as you know, it's all available. So it's public. It's public to the board. It's public to our public. So everyone can see what the type of input we've received. So besides our school sites, we've tried to hit a lot of other stakeholder groups. We've held several different types of parent meetings. We've gone out to our nonprofit organizations. We've hit our business community and Chamber of Commerce. We've had some specific input from our library technicians. In contact with people, we've had individuals say, can we just send you something, you know, that would be kind of our belief. We had some interesting, a really nice summary from music educators that we included on our site. So we tried to just include as many opportunities as we could to get input. One of the difficulties, or challenge, I shouldn't say it's a difficulty, because we are in a good place in San Luis Coastal, is that even with some modest increases in property taxes, Our projections right now are that we have a pretty flat budget. That's what we've shared in all of these presentations. Our budget is balanced, but it's also somewhat flat. We're not receiving LCFF funds in any increased manner. So we project that most of our property tax increases will go to the cost of step and column, rises in statutory health and benefits, rises in the PERS pension costs, and the fact that we do expect some modest student growth. So we're a pretty flat budget. So the difficulty is when you have a flat budget and everyone wants to do things, you have to make some decisions of what you do without. In general, what I would report, and this is a generalized feedback, is that our school community is fairly satisfied with the transparency and kind of appreciate this methodology we're using to gather input. And there seems to be pretty good satisfaction with the course of action we're taking as a school district. The things we are doing seem to be the things that people believe we should be working on and working towards. People seem to have a good understanding of the unique financial status of San Luis Coastal, and I think Mr. Pinkerton has done a really good job of conveying that in these meetings. And so we have some individual kind of feedback from school sites, from parent groups, from nonprofits, from the business community, but because this is a discussion item, I'd rather just kind of give you some general sense that was in your board packet and then make sure you have the opportunity to share your ideas or those things you gleaned, if you had an opportunity to look at those, that you think we should also pay attention to and, of course, have feedback from anyone who might be interested in speaking. There was a real sense, especially among our school communities, that we should stay the course, that we are, there's a general sense of satisfaction in what we're doing in our school district, and there seems to be some purpose flowing through the organization, that we need to continue on our current trajectory, what we're doing with the Common Core State Standards, that we're probably ahead of the game than most school districts around us, and I think our staffs appreciate that. So I think we have to be careful not to change too much. We also need to address the stress, and at the elementary level especially, we heard this over and over at our school sites, that we need to take a look at things like class sizes, teacher preparation time, teacher time away from the school site spent at district meetings or district assessment, grading conferences, professional development, the role of instructional coaching and how that fits into the school site and the school day, and what types of intervention supports we're providing. So many of those things are providing, are causing some what I would call stressors in the elementary realm, and I think that we need to be cognizant of it and think about that as we write our plan and as we collectively bargain, frankly. There seemed to be a good resonating of the need for upgrading our high school facilities. We didn't just hear that from high schools. We heard that from elementary schools and middle schools. We heard that from parents in a big way. So the work we're doing right now in our facility master plan seems to be good work. Among our EL families especially, we heard that the need for summer school and after school opportunities for students and for increasing transportation was a real concern. So it's something we need to pay attention to. STEAM has generated a lot of interest and excitement, not only at Los Osos Middle School, but we heard that through our high schools. We want to, you know, as these students move forward, we need to get on board. And our teachers are desiring technology, not only for students, but for staff. And so the need for infrastructure and devices is important. Our business community and our nonprofits really encouraged us to continue to be out front and talk about what we're doing and figure out avenues to get the word out. We were hearing over and over again that wherever we bring students to do presentations or we go out or we broadcast something, that it's so well received, we just need to figure out how to do more of that. And so that might be something we want to consider, you know, a public relations component to our plan. It's obviously very difficult to take hundreds of comments and make generalizations about them, but I think those are the main ideas. If we stay the course, work on our elementary teacher, deal with some of the teacher's workday, and deal with some of those issues like transportation. I failed to mention one. Counseling and guidance was a recurring theme in those comments. I think we're on the right track. So happy to hear your feedback so we can make sure we're addressing that in the plan, excuse me, and also anything our public who might be here today want to say.
Thank you, Mr. Robinette. Is there, we are going to go to the public, but is there any questions for Mr. Robinette from the board? Okay. Okay. Catherine, Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, and then Mr. Buckman.
Using my phone here because I took notes on my phone. Sorry. So I just wanted to comment that you asked whether we synthesized any of this and had any particular interest in sharing that. But it seems to me as though we have an opportunity. I saw a recurring theme of, again, with the stressors on the elementary school teachers and the need for prep time. If you tie together several things, comments that came up repeatedly, it seemed like an opportunity to have a mobile STEAM program that would go from elementary school to elementary school and free up the elementary teachers to have prep time, but at the same time provide a specialist to teach science. But I want to make sure that in the word STEAM, we make sure we include technology and mathematics and art, and among the art that would be offered would be music and also, you know, art, creating art. So that I would love to see if let's try to tie together those two, the need of the reducing the stress and the opportunity to create a STEAM, a mobile STEAM program.
Thank you. And we did hear some of those creative, you know, one of the questions we asked, knowing prep time is something close to the heart of elementary teachers right now, especially primary teachers. And how would we do that? And we heard some of those same things through some sort of a specialist model. You know, right now we do PE specialists, but not a full 100-minute PE specialist a week for all grade levels, and music specialists, but only at the 4-6 level. So, thank you.
Mr. Buckman.
A lot of that was covered, and I appreciate it. I want to thank you so much for involving so much of the community, and I'm sure it was a drain, but it just sounds like we're getting a lot of good stuff. The other thing is, it also sounds like, if I'm right, that we did as much educating as we did learning. Is that a one way to put it?
What do you think, Mr. Pinkerton? It seems like it. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, when I look at the responses, it's got to be based on stuff that maybe some of these people have never heard.
Mm-hmm. Especially with regard to the budget. Budgets are tricky stuff anyway, but just having that understanding of kind of the uniqueness of San Luis Coastal, the fact that we really do have a lot more money than other districts around us, and yet we're also at that kind of 86% level of personnel costs and have to be careful. And, you know, there's just some benefits of being in this district of having that level of money, but also having, you know, very small schools and lots of programs. And so we're rich in other areas. So it was kind of good to reiterate that and actually show people how we're spending those dollars.
There's a lot of discussion right now in the public about LCFF and more money going to education. And so I think it was critical for our staff to understand that we're not receiving any of that new money. However, we are better off than most other districts. And so I think that understanding part, because they read in the papers, they see, you know, more money, education, you know, those types of things. And so to understand that we're in a place where, you know, they've cut a majority of our categorical dollars over the years. And so that said, we have a balanced budget. We're in a good place, right? And so it was definitely, I think, enlightening for people. And just the whole, you know, it's a huge change. And not just the LCAP, this plan we have to write, but the way that schools are funded now in the state of California, it's completely changed over the past year.
All right, we will open this for public comment, and please feel free to come forward and ask questions.
I have a speaker's request from Andrea Castillo. If you'd like to come forward, please.
Good Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Andrea Castillo, and I am here tonight to speak on behalf of San Luis Obispo Symphony and also the newly formed Slo County Alliance for Arts Education. And I'm here to speak on the topic and to advocate for more music education in our schools in San Luis Coastal. And I've also brought a friend with me. This is Keisha Freyaldenhoven, and she's going to tell us a little bit about her experience playing the violin.
May I lower this? Thank you. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak today. My name is Keisha Freyaldenhoven, and I'm a senior here at San Luis Obispo High School, and I feel so honored to have been asked to represent San Luis Obispo's Youth Symphony in Music Education here at the school board. I feel that music is an incredibly integral part of my life. I'm a violinist, and I began playing the violin when I was 4 years old. My mother would always tell me stories of her violin experiences with her middle school symphony, and of course, at the tender age of 3, I wanted to emulate everything my mother did. So I began the violin, and at 4 years old, my mom and I began taking lessons together, and it was a really wonderful bonding experience, and we both auditioned to be part of the youth symphony. My mother made the cut, and unfortunately I did not, but I persevered and tried again at age 5, and when I was 5 years old, I was a proud member of Preparatory Strings. Since then, I've been a part of the youth symphony, progressing from preparatory to academy and finally the symphony. My experience with this incredible organization has been absolutely transformative. I spoke with my mother a bit before this presentation and asked her if she thought I should add anything from a parental or doctoral standpoint. And as a local physician, she wanted to emphasize the importance of music stimulation in brain neurons. She believes that my personal growth and success is completely attributed to my participation in music. I'm the salutatorian of San Luis Obispo High School, and throughout my high school career, I've been involved in AP classes, many clubs, and I plan to attend a four-year university this fall. She believes that because I began music so early, my brain neurons were stimulated at a young age, and this encouraged academic success. So that's that. But I can tell you a little bit more about how music has and the symphony participation has shaped my life. First, it's exposed me to incredible composers. Also with the Youth Symphony, I've been able to meet alive composers and play their music. And these experiences have made music so much more personal because I was allowed to speak with composers and embody their music and learn about modern inspiration for music. Also in the symphony environment, I'm surrounded by individuals who share my passion for music, and we can discuss our favorite composers, play... Oh, excuse me.
You may continue.
Thank you. we shared this passion for music, and I was able to discuss our favorite composers, playing quartets and trios, and also create this incredible music. This collaboration was always very exciting for me, and I cannot even pinpoint a moment when I... did not cherish these magical moments created inside the band room of the high school. So I feel eternally thankful for the San Luis Obispo Youth Symphony. This organization has not only fueled my desire to continue the violin, but it has also instilled in me a strong work ethic, allowed me to connect with like-minded peers, and ultimately express myself in ways that I could not have imagined otherwise. I sincerely feel that these benefits of music education are limitless, and if possible, every child should have an opportunity to grow the way I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is it okay if I add just a couple things?
Yes, you may. I consider that we have two speakers here.
Oh, in that case, let me grab my notes. I'll just start off briefly. Thank you, Keisha. We just have the most incredible students as a part of the Youth Symphony program, and so that's okay. I have the opportunity every day firsthand to see the success and the impact that arts education and specifically music education has on our students.
overall, and also certainly in this instance, academically. So I know we don't have the specific opportunity that some of the other school districts have where there is funding available, additional funding, but it does seem like now's a crucial time. So I'm happy to be here to speak just a little bit about music education. I also spoke with our music teachers or representative in the district to ask them if there were some changes, if we were to make some additions, what would be the top priorities. And the first priority I heard was, and this is our pie in the sky, with the transition of having our classroom teachers in the primary levels teach music, they would love to reinstate the program. They would love to see credentialed teachers and then allow our classroom teachers to focus on their transition to the core curriculum, hopefully alleviate some of the stress that they're feeling day to day, and give them some more support and certainly some guidance when it comes to music education. The other thing I heard from our teachers is replacing supplies. The textbooks and the instruments that they have been well used and well loved over the years, so they would love some support to see those materials replaced. And the other thing they mentioned was possibly the opportunity to take a field trip to experience arts outside of the classroom, possibly a trip to the Performing Arts Center, maybe even to hear the San Luis Obispo Symphony for the first time, support with transportation, support with tickets, to give those students the opportunity to experience the arts firsthand. So thank you so much for your time. I know these are difficult decisions to make, and I'm sure you have a lot of people that have a lot of need. We at the Symphony and with the Arts Alliance will commit to partnering certainly with our district and with all of you to make these opportunities available to our students as much as we can. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We are still open for public comment on. Yes, please come forward.
Hi, my name is Catherine Kirby, and I'm a teacher at Monarch Grove Elementary. I'd like to talk on the stressors with elementary school teachers, and I'm going to start off with thanking you guys both for coming. One of the stressors that I know that has helped both of my children relieve stress is music. When they were in elementary school, they both were involved in the San Luis Obispo Symphony. I also took it upon myself to be involved with them also here at the San Luis campus and volunteered quite a bit. So I do know that music is a vital part of finding that whole child and how we can, you know, make sure that they reach their goals. But what I want to talk about is the stressors for the classroom teacher. I currently teach fourth grade fourth grade at Monarch Grove. And one of the things that I'm finding is that instead of teaching and the learning happening, I'm testing. I am constantly driven by tests. Monthly tests, mandated tests, now practicing the new LCAP that we're doing. And it's just, it's overwhelming. There's no fun in education. You can't go out and discover butterflies. You can't tie it in with your science because everything is so mandated and driven by the next test you have to give. And we see stresses not only on the teachers, but we see it in the faces of our students. And I think that's why one of the things that we came from our CTA meeting, and we talked about mental health services and the students, because we see the pressure on their faces. And every time we have to coach them into saying, oh, just do your best, or, you know, this is just going to show us, you know, we aren't fooling them. We aren't. We're showing them how to be good test takers. And that isn't what education's about. Education is about learning things that you're interested in, finding pleasure, and going for it, and looking for those things that are interesting to you. And that's what really drives education. We want to find those things that kids are interested in and pull on them. But not just look at what that next state mandated curriculum thing is that we have to reach. And it is overwhelming. And I know I've talked to a couple of board members about different items directly with these. And I know we've tried to, you know, call you. But, you know, it's very hard to write up even a letter because we're overwhelmed. We go from our classroom to correcting things, to going home and taking them home to correct them, to taking out binders and binders and getting ready for the next day to plan. And I know we've had the opportunity, which we really appreciate, the superintendent with the CRT meetings, to show them just how much we're doing. And it's just, it is too much. And you can ask any teacher and they will say the same thing. Elementary is overwhelmed. And there has to be a step back and what's the best practices for the student. And that's what I really ask you to go to schools and ask teachers, is that, are we doing the best for students? Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Judy Neuhauser. I teach third grade at Monarch Grove. I just want to echo what Catherine Kirby just said about testing. I teach 8 and 9-year-olds, and in the next 8 weeks, they have to take 4 days of SBAC testing. They have to take an SMI test that in general, over the last 2 times I've given it, has been anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour and a half, depending on how fast the kids read. They have to take an SRI test, which also takes anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour and a half. They have to take the BAS test, which takes about a 45-minute period. They have to take a math multiplication test, which is also about another 45 minutes to an hour. They have to take a math performance test, which takes at least 45 minutes to an hour. And they have to do a writing post test. These are 8-year-olds. And that's in the next 8 weeks. These are all district mandated tests. They have nothing to do with my own personal assessments that I use to figure out how my kids are doing. I don't use the results from the SMI. I get a number. I can't see the questions they took. I can't see the answers they gave. I don't know why they made their answers. It gives me no feedback. It is not a useful broad screening tool for me. Same with the SRI. I have no idea what their questions were, what the passages were, and why they made the errors they did, because I can't see their questions and I can't see their answers. So the BAS test is useful. I use that one. The math multiple choice and performance test, this is the second time they've had a test like that. The first time they hadn't had any instruction. And so it was a, quote, baseline. And so here I have 8-year-olds crying that they don't know how to do it because I haven't taught them. I know I haven't taught them. They're 8 years old. If we are trying to get our kids to hate math, we're doing a really good job. So the second thing I want to talk about is I want to talk about EL instruction. I have a newcomer. We have 2 newcomers at Monarch Grove. They each get 1 half hour of directed language instruction every day. 1 half hour. We have been having an intervention teacher that has taken another half hour to do Lance Gentile's oral structured oral language development. And other than that, they are on their own. One of them is in the classroom with a teacher who speaks no Spanish. I do speak Spanish, but I cannot teach the writing lesson over again in Spanish. And the Lucy Calkins has no realia that can go with it because we are studying mentor texts. I don't have a mentor text she can study. And so she is sitting in my class without access to the curriculum. We need more language instruction for especially the newcomers. And Pacheco is not an option for her. So I'd really like you to consider where it is you really are spending your money. How are we spending it? Counselors, I had a child so angry in my class the other day that the only thing he could say was when I asked him how he was feeling, it was rage, anger. When I asked him what he needed, he said, I need that student to die. He's 8 years old, and I had no counselor to send him to because Rose was not at our school that day. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that wishes to speak to the board at this time? Okay. With that, we will move on. On the agenda, to the item 8.02, which is the award of the Elementary Campus Wireless and Control Project.
Yes, data, data and wireless. Wireless data and control.
Yes, basically bringing wireless to our elementary sites. So I'm going to start this, and then I have Mr. Plaza here to answer questions about the term leaseback and any questions the board may have regarding that. It's basically a construction term, and again, he can tie it in. But the board put aside money this year, basically, to bring wireless to our elementary sites. And so this is kind of the first step in the process of making that happen. So we are have gone out, done an RFQ, kind of put this out to three different companies that can facilitate this potential project. Mr. Palazzo, as well as our IT director, Kimberly McGrath, interviewed the three companies and have selected Thoma Electric as the best kind of fit for us to get this project completed based on those interviews. This first phase, what we're asking the board to approve tonight, is kind of the design phase, as well as the cost estimating that goes with that. So they'll get together, design it with their engineers, with the project, bring that forward, and then we will then bring back to the board kind of this lease option, which again Anthony can explain, because the word lease is always kind of, you know, it's just different in terms of looking at a construction project. But he will bring that back to the board for final approval to really get this going. And so we're looking at a tight time frame, getting this accomplished over the course of the summer, getting it accomplished. And we feel that Thoma is definitely the group that can help us get that done. So, again, Anthony, anything you want to add to it? And then we'll answer any questions.
Think that about... summed
it up.
What we've done so far.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the important things to keep in mind is we've sort of put this project together as a design build project, mostly because of the tight timeline during construction. We've got 6 weeks to spend $1 million. Okay, think about building $1 million house in 6 weeks. It's very difficult. So, and it's spread out over 9-10 sites. To make sure we've got a design and a construction team that can get that work done in that amount of time and not be on our sites in December, January of the following year, et cetera, is really critical. And so that's why we discussed it internally about what would be the best method for getting the project designed and getting it delivered by August 18th so that we can have a week to test the systems, and then when school opens on the 25th, we've got wireless in our elementaries. So we went with this design build method that uses this pre-construction agreement that Mr. Pinkerton had described up front. We hired Thoma Electric, that's both a design and a construction company. They'll design it to our specifications. At the same time, they'll be providing cost estimates for the project as a whole. We'll make adjustments to the scope and the budget as needed. And then we'll be bringing back the mechanical document, which is the leaseback agreement, to actually construct the project. So that's kind of a 30,000-foot view of some technical terms in terms of delivering the project, but I hope that kind of brings that, it gives a little more clarity on that piece and what we've done so far.
Mr. Millar.
I've only been a lawyer for 30-something years. I have no idea what a leaseback
okay.
is. And
it's been around for that long.
Well, yeah. I sense we're moving toward that, and I don't know how the other board members feel, but I'd need a lot more background information on the advantages of doing it that way, who actually ends up owning the equipment and has control of the equipment, who eats the sinking cost to keep things current. Anyway, those kinds
okay.
of things.
In terms of the process itself, it has been in the books in Ed Code as a method of construction for over 30 years. In the late 70s, I believe, it sort of came to fruition. It kind of was something that no one was using for a long period of time until about 10 years ago, and it started to get used in some of the larger cities. In terms of who's using it in the county, we're the last district in the county to actually implement this type of construction. So Paso's using it, Tascadero's using it, Lucia Mar's using it, Santa Maria Bonita's using it. So what we in essence do is, and I'll try and keep this somewhat simple, is we lease the site to the entity, we'll call it the developer at this point.
with the agreement that they will make improvements on that property. They in turn lease that property back to us for a dollar amount that includes the cost of those improvements. So if you've got a 6-week project, we have a 6-week term on our lease. It's for $60. We pay them $10 a week over the 6 weeks, and at the term of their end of their loan, they turn the property back to us, and it's ours, and we have the leasehold improvements. I'm extremely simplifying that process. But again, that's in essence the mechanics of the agreement.
Okay, that helps.
So okay.
And then one other source in view of our last speakers, with whom I share their concerns, where is the funding for this work coming from?
So the funding was money that was set aside by the board. And these are one-time funds, basically,
right.
That we have in our budget to put forward.
Okay. And it's out of the general fund. It is basically one of those choices that we have to make, but mm-hmm. it's essentially done to get the technology into the classroom. So let's see.
You asked the advantages, why we would do this.
That was
okay. If we went with a traditional design, bid, build method, we'd hire an engineer. They would spend, they would spend a few months designing the project. They would probably have very little input from any contractors, because any contractors that would have involvement wouldn't be able to bid the project. So we're kind of working in a vacuum, if you will. I've got to go through a 6 to 8 week process to bid it. I've got to award it to the lowest responsible bidder, who, could be anybody that has the licenses to do it, whether they have the ability, they have the desire, or they have the wherewithal. We have no control over that. We also have no control over who's involved in the project, if they're using vendors or equipment that, that are district standard. We just lose a lot of that control, and we also run the potential of them finding change orders and finding reasons to not finish and charge us, additional overhead costs, etc. Because of the tight timeline, and also the ability to integrate the design team and the construction team. In other words, we're writing, in essence, it's two contracts in this case, but it's in essence two contracts to one entity. They're able to start thinking about how they're going to get this built. They're able to start doing some value engineering up front in terms of bringing their own construction teams in to help design it. In fact, one of the things we've already discovered in the last 2 weeks is we can reuse a lot of existing cable TV conduit that's not being used out there right now. I may not have had that opportunity if an engineer wasn't looking at it through that lens. I'm not saying that they wouldn't, but again, I'm able to get some of those value engineering things. We as a district are able to get those up front as part of this and have that discussion. We can make the decision, reuse it or not reuse it. And so it's a much more seamless project to get the construction team starting to think, how are we going to do this in 6 weeks now, rather than they're figuring it out and they're using a design build team with this lease-back construction contract method.
We do have the benefit of having put wireless in both LAMS and LOMS last year. And so I think we have some, idea of cost associated mm-hmm. with this. So it's not like we're out of the blue. We don't know what we're going to – that's why we came up with the $1.1 million to set aside for the project as well. So, if we're seeing something after this first phase that's – doesn't make sense or isn't lining up with what we've seen at both LAMS and LOMS, then that's something that we can then address at the time.
We also can, if we start to see preliminary numbers that are like, whoa, what is that? We can send it out to an independent estimator and get a second opinion on that. We have that right. So again, it gives us some flexibility. It gives us some ability to work with the contractor and the designer, if you will, to come up with the best solution possible. It's really how the private sector does work. Anytime you build something in the commercial world, your contractor's on board while you're in the design process trying to figure out what's the best and most effective way, cost-effective way to build this. As opposed to in the design, bid, build world, like most agencies have done over the years, you're relying on the engineer to take their best guess at how it should be built and then relying on a contractor to say, yeah, that is, or they may have a different idea and then, and you run into changes in the field and things like that. So,
thank you. That's been very educational.
Okay, very good. And Santa Barbara, Hope, Buellton,
County Office
of Ed in San Luis County is using it. So we're not the first, and it's been fairly well vetted in this area. And the feedback we get from a lot of the contractors is they appreciate it better because they're in.
if I understand correctly, and I've asked a lot of questions about this particular agenda item, if I understand correctly, what we're proposing to do is to authorize tonight the funding for the design of the project.
Mm-hmm.
And then subsequently, it will be brought before us the proposed awarding of the contract of the lease-leaseback agreement.
The construction portion.
The construction yeah. portion of it. We keep talking about the tight time frame, and I do understand that it is, you know, it is a tight time frame, but I am wondering if we were not to make the 6-week window, how disruptive would the work be to the educational process in the classrooms if we had to go on?
I don't think we would. Here's if we didn't make the 6-week window and it was and we did a design bid build. Okay, so we're in the kind of the typical model. We have again no selection, no kind of input on who gets the project. And it's, you know, and you start to get into that discussion of, well, it's the district's fault, the architect or the engineer didn't design this right. They start the finger pointing at the end of the job. They're having to work overtime. Now we're having to, you know, work it in the evenings.
Mr. Palazzo, yeah. I understand okay. how all this works.
Okay.
You're explaining to me, I do understand. I'm just saying, if we were not able to, are we really tied to that 6-week time frame?
Go ahead, sorry.
As a drop dead date, you know, or is there some room to continue on if we had to?
I think if we said, all right, it's a 12-week project and we put it out to, say, public bid, because they're probably going to need to have them work outside of school hours, you're going to pay a premium for overtime and things like that. So I think you couldn't have them work during the day on the campus. I think that's just too disruptive, quite honestly, the type of work. You know, you're going to be in every room for an hour setting devices, pulling wires, cutting drywall. Just all those things are going to have to happen. And then at the programming stage, they have to come in and configure and program all the devices and things like that. So in my opinion, it's a little too disruptive. It may only be an hour here in each class, but again, they're having to work around 30 students, and it's not efficient on the contractor side either. So
what we're doing here, if I understand it correctly, is we've got somebody designing the project,
mm-hmm.
and then presumably it will be that same contractor installing the mm-hmm. work, and I understand that for the continuity of the work, it's not reasonable to expect that there won't be some unforeseen conditions and some change orders. I think there are on just about every project of any reasonable size. Mm-hmm. But so the 1.1 is not a hard number, but we try to stick to it as close as we can. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the 6-week summer break's work.
Yeah, that's all cooked into the specific language of that is that we still a lot of the same technical tools that we have in a standard design bid build contract are still kind of held through in that lease back. So as a former architect working, I didn't functionally see anything different from how I executed the contract, if you will, as the owner's representative. It's kind of, it works the same way in terms of how you actually do it in the field. It's the legal terms and the legal mechanisms that allow the work to happen is what's sort of different, and it's kind of that stuff that happens in the background that we on the ground don't actually see. So we hold retention, you know, the district will and the inspector will evaluate pay apps and making sure that the progress when they're billing us is the progress that they say they've met, and it's out, you know, equipment's in the field, things are being installed, they are 20% done, they are 50% done, etc. So all those technical mechanics still occur. It's just, again, using a different contracting method.
Okay. It's one I'm not familiar with, and so I have a lot of questions about it, but I'll trust those that know better than myself that it's, you know, that it's the right way to go in this circumstance. Certainly we do want the work done, but if it runs over and we have to complete part of it after school starts in September, it won't be the end of the world, I don't think, for classroom instruction.
I would agree.
Not optimal, but not the end of
the world. School will happen.
Oh, yeah. School. We're not. Yeah. I think one of the other things, too, is by selecting a firm that's got this figured out at this point on how they're going to get to the end date, you're assuring your best chance at hitting that success and that drop dead.
You have a history with and a relationship too. I understand
and which
that.
Which is why the three firms that were sent to were chosen to send to. So
thank you for your time tonight.
No, my pleasure.
Dr. Eisenbeth Rogers.
Yeah, sorry, I've been looking this way most of the evening.
Hello. Would it make sense to have a completion date incentive?
I don't know if that's actually legal. In terms of a public contract, I want to check that before I would say that.
They don't get paid.
Yeah, I mean, the incentive is to get to
it's a big incentive.
To pay them. Yeah,
most of the, you can do that as an individual if you're hiring someone.
Yeah,
finish
as a private.
This
I'm not sure that's.
Get...
I'll be honest with you. I'd have to check the legality on whether that could be something in there. What I would say is what's typically done in public contracts. Either lease back or traditional design bid build is liquidated damages. If you go over, then it starts to cost money back.
I see.
So that's typically the incentive, if you will.
That makes sense.
Okay.
Thank you.
Because there is true damage done. We can't open school. We don't have the use of that. There is. So.
Mr. Millar.
It might be for Ryan. Who's handling the drafting of the lease back and
Lozano Smith.
Okay.
And they're very familiar.
Yeah. Okay. And I've worked with their documents in at LucMR is in and actually the individuals I've called from their office is the same individual that worked at LucMR's lease back. So
I was gonna make the motion, but
go ahead, Mr. Barker.
I'd like to make the motion to approve the item.
Okay. So you're moving to award the
contract.
The elementary campus wireless data and control project to Tomo Electric?
Yes, ma'am.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mrs. Roger. Is there any other discussion from the board? Okay, seeing none, we'll proceed to vote. Does this require a roll call vote? No. Okay. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And we do have one absence. Okay, that would be Mr. Unger is absent. So the motion passes 6-0 with one absent.
Walt, this is your chance.
Mr. Plaza, I heard a rumor that today is your 40th birthday.
False.
Clearly, you're way too old to be 40, just judging with my own eyes, but could you confirm that or deny that rumor?
I'm going to take the fifth.
Happy birthday, Anthony.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Millar's eyes are yellowed with age and abuse.
and Mr. Millar?
You look much younger than 40.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Millar, where might you have heard said rumor? I see.
Mr. Palazzo better be only 40 because I was his teacher
That's
in
right.
middle school. So he better not be.
And it was what, your first year? Or you? Yeah, it was your, definitely your first year. Yeah. Anyway. No, a three must have disappeared. It looks like.
It's okay. All right. I'm sorry. This is a proposed revision to Administrative Regulations 5144.1 on suspension and expulsion / due process second reading.
Thank you. And this is a second reading, and we'd love to get some direction in either way on this. As the board recalls, I brought this to the board about a month ago. And this was a recommendation to make a change to an administrative regulation. We usually only ask the board to make changes to board policy, but because this is so intricately involved in your decisions on expulsion, we thought we should make sure we get board consent before we change anything. So just to remind you of the discussion, we have a section in this administrative regulation that says any time, and that's the underlined section up here, that a student unlawfully possesses, uses, sells, or otherwise furnishes under the influence of a controlled substance or alcoholic beverage or intoxicant of any kind, that we always have the ability to suspend or expel for that offense. But we have a note in our administrative regulation that says, if this violation reoccurs within one calendar year from the date of infraction in San Luis Coastal Unified School District, a recommendation for expulsion will be made. So that's unique to that one section of all of the different behaviors. So we have had a past practice in our administrative regulations to any time a student commits a second offense of any kind on a possession charge, or being under the automatic recommendation for expulsion. What I shared last time is I know there's some good discussion and differences of opinion, which is wonderful, but I do want to get some direction. And what I said is I try to bring back some data or at least some legal recommendation about this. If you can click to the next one, I can share a little bit of data. So just looking at this school year and the last school year, we had 36 recommendations for expulsion over the last 2 years, which is pretty good. You know, we don't have a lot of expulsions in San Luis Coastal. We had 36 recommendations for expulsion. 19 of those were directly connected with this administrative regulation. So a little over half of the expulsions that come before the board are for second offenses of drug or alcohol. Of those 19, we expelled 12 of those students, either through a stipulated expulsion or board expulsion, and 7 of them were suspended, meaning that at the time of the expulsion hearing, the recommendation was not to expel, was to suspend that expulsion. So in a little over half of the expulsions that we face, there are these issues, and of those, we expelled 12 students and didn't expel 7 of them. So I guess part of the impetus for this is there were 7 students, ostensibly, who they might have benefited by the suspended expulsion or laying in wait and waiting to that hearing and having that expulsion, but we literally took students out of the comprehensive school environment for up to 30 days pending a recommendation not to expel them, not to, in fact, have difficult to defend our language. That doesn't mean we can't do it, but that in an appeal hearing, it would be difficult to defend. And the reason is that we are treating that offense, a second possession or under the influence offense, the same way we are treating these offenses. These are the 5 offenses under Ed Code that you must recommend expulsion for. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. If a student commits one of these 5, they must be recommended for expulsion. So the firearm, brandishing a knife, the sale of a controlled substance, sexual assault or battery, and then explosives. So we are treating this one that says a second possession or a second under the influence is the equivalent of these. And what we're told is, well, boards can do what boards want to do, and you have it in your ARs, and if that's what you want to do, but it would be difficult to defend under this because Ed Code says these are really the only things that you should be looking at for automatic expulsion. Understand that we would still be bringing, obviously, a majority of our expulsions forward still for a second offense, and a majority of those students would still be expelled if you look at our past practice, but what we are recommending is that not be an automatic thing. Have I made that clear or not? So anyway, seeking your direction, either no, leave it alone, we're comfortable with what our past practice has been, yes, we're okay with that recommendation, change it, or anything else that would be helpful for us. Thanks.
Mr. Millar.
With the first caveat that I don't think we should be engaged in the business of writing ARs, but I understand you're there differently. And it's always been important to the board, if I may speak for my colleagues, that we are involved in the expulsion process. Now, we don't want to gum it up, but we want to have our hands on it because we want to know what's going on, and I think most of us still feel the same way. So I'm willing to support removing the language because I trust our administrators and our staff to make the appropriate decisions. So I don't have any problem with the language being in there, but I would like the board to be kept informed on how often that discretion was used to not bring a student forward.
Certainly.
And maybe just generally the circumstances. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't have to be like a monthly report or anything, but just maybe catch the board up on.
Yeah, Chris Dowler is keeping really good records right now, so we can do a good job of any type of reporting like that, demographics, where they're occurring, what the offenses are. I mean, we're really tracking our suspensions and expulsions really closely, so that's easily done.
And I'd like to hear what my fellow board members feel about it.
Mr. Buckman.
Yes, I would entirely support Mr. Millar's concept of a report. I'd like to actually see it on a regular basis, but that's neither here nor there right now. At some point, Rick, I had talked to you about my perception that more minorities were being brought before the board for suspensions, and the numbers came up to basically support that. So my one fear with this is that that we do include within that report all the subgroups.
Demographic data.
The demographic.
I do want to open it to the public to comment on there's anybody that wished to address the board on this particular issue. Okay, seeing no one, then we will move for a motion on this. We do have some discussion. Dr. Asendrath Rogers.
I was going to move approval of item number A. Which number are we on here? AR. I can't read it, sorry. AR511.1.
Okay, and that's to strike the language.
Yeah. Okay, let me try that again. 5144.
0.1. Okay, we have a motion by Dr. Asendrath Rogers and a second by Mr. Millar. All those in favor?
Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? Okay, and we have one absence, Mr. Unger. So the motion passes 6 to 0 with one absence. Okay, we are now on the item 8.05, which is the CSBA Executive Officer nomination. And this is to nominate Mr. Chris Unger for the CSBA ballot as president-elect and to direct the superintendent or designee to submit the nomination to the CSBA. So there is a question for Mr. Millar.
The form has the box for vice president checked, and I thought he was agreeing to be president-elect. Oh, yeah, I don't. But I would be happy to support the nomination of Mr. Unger for the position of president-elect. I hope we see.
That's fine. I just want to say that over the many years that Mr. Unger has served on the board, I've not always agreed with him, but I certainly admire him, and he has certainly put a tremendous amount of effort into learning about school boards and being involved with CSBA and going out to the various school sites and talking to staff. And I think that's really, really important that he's made all these efforts. I can't imagine anybody that's more qualified for this. So do we have any...
Just one other comment, yes, if I can. And I probably should have mentioned this before, but just to piggyback on that, all the effort that Chris puts in here in the district, he also puts in up at CSBA. And, everybody up there, and there's hundreds of delegates, knows Chris and how hard he works.
Well, that's great. And I do think I have to go to the public with this very quickly. Is there anybody who wishes to address the board or sing the praises of Mr. Unger? Okay. No. We're not. Anyway, let's go back for the vote. All in favor of the recommendation, or the nomination, I should say, of Mr. Unger? Aye. Anybody opposed? Okay, so the motion passes 6-0 with one absence. All right, we are now on to item 8.06, approval to pay a board member's salary for a permissible absence. And we have two. Do we have to deal with them separately, or can we? Oh, okay. Yes.
We may want to act on them separately because Mrs. Shepherd.
That motion. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Is I did. I believed I seconded. I'm sorry, I didn't state that Mr. Millar moved the approval to pay board member Ellen Sheffer, and I second the motion. And I'm going to open it for public comment and now close it. Is there any board discussion? Okay. All in favor of the approval to pay board member Ellen Sheffer for absence?
Aye.
Opposed? And one absence. The motion passes 6-0. And, oh, I'm sorry, and one abstention. So passes 5-0, one abstention, one absence.
And that abstention is Mrs. Sheffer. That's what we need to get in the record.
Okay. The abstention is Mrs. Sheffer, and the absence is Mr. Unger. Okay. You know, someday, months from now, I'll get this right. The second approval to pay a board member regards the absence of Mr. Unger on the April the 8th.
I'll move approval.
Okay, so we have the move approval. The motion has been moved by Mrs. Roger and seconded by Mrs. Sheffer. Is there any discussion? Is there any public comment? Seeing none. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. The motion passes 6-0 with one absence, which is Mr. Unger. Okay. So we are now on the surplus property, item 9.03, the acceptance of donation, item 9.04, the approval of furniture and equipment request, 9.05, the approval of purchase orders, 9.06, approval of warrants and payroll, 9.07, approval of quarterly report on uniform complaint filings, the Williams settlement, and 9.08, the approval of the international student exchange programs. I don't see that anybody wishes any items pulled.
Okay. I'll move approval of items 9.01 through 9.08.
Okay, the motion is made by Mr. Millar to approve those items.
And I'll second.
And a second by Mrs. Rogers. Is there any further discussion? Is there any public comment? Okay, seeing none. All in favor of items 9.01 and 9.08, the approvals? Any opposed? Any abstentions? And the item passes 6-0 with one absence. All right, we are now due to the we're down to item 10.03, the advanced agenda. Does anyone have anything for the advanced agenda? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to the board reports. Do we have some board reports? Mr.
Hey.
Buckman, what do you have for us there in your little box?
I have some of the 168 or hundreds of cupcakes that were made as a competition at Laguna Middle School in Kristen Carlin's home economics class. Yet again this year, the stars lined up and the leftovers were from the contest, but I was assured they'd be okay. I was very surprised. I went to Los Osos Middle School on a Friday night. They had set up a these are the community services that are available activity. And in my mind, it was like, Friday night, who's going to show up for this on a Friday night? And I don't know whether it was the free hot dogs or the services, but it was very, very well attended. Last Friday night, I get to attend the Hands-On Heroes Awards for First Five, and the room was packed. There were probably about 200 people in that room. And I personally would like to thank whichever board member took the time to speak with Ryan, I guess it was primarily on the leaseback, so we could get that clearly identified. I really appreciate that.
Yes, you did, as always. Is there any other board reports? Yes, Mrs. Roger.
Well, I hadn't planned to talk about this, but I think actually I will. And that is that I had the opportunity last week to observe the District Crisis Intervention Response Team in action, responding to the death of a child. And it was really remarkable to see the way that Chris Dowler and the others involved in that process, the people who've received the CERT training, counselors in the district who sign up for it, agree that if for staff and students and school community, and within an hour they show up, and there are counselors from various sites present. There are, in this case, there were two representatives from County Mental Health. There was representation from hospice. There was a retired school district employee who was had worked for many years with a number of the students that were grieving, and so that they were able to relate to her and felt comfortable talking to her. There were activities for the children to participate in that were positive and uplifting, but still acknowledged their grief and what they were going through. I was so proud of our district and the fact that we have this process in place, ready to activate within 1 hour, and how well it worked, how well the children responded to it. I wasn't privy to what went on when hospice was working with staff, so I can only assume that that also was a beneficial process. I just felt that I wanted to say that I felt very, very proud and encouraged of our ability to respond to emergencies in this district. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that, Marilyn. I think that's true of many crises that we respond to, is that we're very sensitive to the needs of our students and our staff. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
I just wanted to, and I know that Benjamin Peters is one of the representatives who has prepared public speaking, and Mara Pease is going to be extemporaneous public speaking, and the advanced team from 2 years ago that was the national winner will be is one of the state representatives, and the novice team, they've just done enormously well. And so all of the kudos go to Mrs. Evans, of course, and Mrs. Bates. But I just wanted to say that they were incredibly impressive, as always.
Thank you, Dr. Rogers. Eisendrath Rogers. Is there any other board reports? Well, seeing none, I think we are adjourned until Thursday, when we will meet again. That's Thursday, April 10th, for a closed session. Thank you all, and good night.